So, did the Keir Starmer conference speech seal the deal with the people he needs to persuade? And are any of them Scots? There were some interesting ideas that might push the SNP to reconsider their own opposition or lukewarm attitude towards having a publicly owned energy company, for example, since Great British Energy, based on a sovereign wealth fund, looks set to scoop up a lot of the renewable energy that comes from Scotland. Unless there's independence and a good plan from the SNP. We look also at the just jaw-dropping, disastrous nature of the mini-budget produced by Kwasi Kwarteng last week and the unthinkable response now from the markets and the disastrous situation that everyone in Britain finds themselves in. Should we be going for an immediate general election if it can possibly be contrived? Or does anybody think it's really good to see people fall to pieces in financial terms this winter?
Those are the headlines. Now for the podcast.
Hi, chums, and welcome to this week's Leslie Riddick podcast. And, of course, nothing at all has actually happened in the 3 weeks since I decided I was going to take a wee break in Italy, more of that later, possibly, and you took your wee trip up to Egg. But it's a delayed, not just for the 3 weeks that in between the last one, but we did decide yet again to delay because Sir Keir Starmer made his keynote speech at the end of this year's Labour Party conference, which everyone who attended it seems to think has been the bestest conference ever, the most agreeable, everybody's on the same page, and yippee, aren't the Tories cocking this up so badly that this is what Starmer described as 1964, 1945, 1970, 1997, this is Labour's moment.
Yeah, well, you know, it could be south of the border. I mean, you've got to remember, I sort of remind yourself when you're watching this that it's just not aimed at you. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I think, I don't know if Labour have just written off progressives in Scotland, but it feels like it. It sounds like it.
Yeah.
I mean, just the mentions he made of Scotland were just infuriating. Thing, you know, because he's repeating this thing Anas Sarwar's done of listing all the successes they've had at council level. And I suppose it's true that quite a number of people just don't realise that actually, you know, the reason that Labour are running some councils across Scotland are either explicitly with support from the Conservatives or because they got basically the largest party would have been the SNP. Had the Tories not voted against that to put Labour into power so that essentially, even if they're not actually up there in a formal coalition, the only reason Labour are running some councils like Fife is because they got Tory and Lib Dem support to oppose the largest single group, which was the SNP by a country mile. So if that feels like a big result, you know, Edinburgh, Fife, Murray, South mm-hmm. Ayrshire, blah, blah, West Lothian, you know, fine, knock yourselves out. I guess it's true that some people in the midst of all this just won't know the detail of it. And perhaps that, you know, plays to a couple of people thinking, oh, God, I didn't realise that Labour were doing so well now. So maybe that does work. But I mean, some things I was just... Some things are just infuriating, and it makes me wonder, having just listened to it, if I actually misheard some bits, because I tweeted something there. I'm just going to find it again, because I thought, what? There was a point where towards the end of it, you know, Starmer started to have a bit of a pop at Scotland.
Yep.
And basically said, Labour will make Brexit work. You won't get that from the Tories and conference. You won't get that from the SNP either.
Yeah.
Huzzah! Right. That's exactly why we vote for SNP, my dear. Because Brexit's a disaster. You haven't got the courage to stand up for it. You're now even going to make Brexit work. That's not our thing. You know, that's not our politics. 72% of Scots at the latest poll would vote Remain if they were given the chance. The SNP aren't masking the catastrophe of Brexit. So why are you? You know, and I don't know. Did I mishear that?
No, because I mean that was the direct lead out from, he was, people didn't vote for Brexit because of X, Y, and Z, for reduction in workers' rights. They didn't vote for Brexit because of all these nasty things that were going to happen. They voted Brexit because they wanted to take back control. They wanted to, they were aspiration people. And then he did slip in before, and I'm going to continue with control immigration through a points-based system. So yeah, it was that. He went straight from that. He says, you won't get it from the SNP either. And that was, I think, about the fourth or fifth standing ovation he got. He got two standing ovations when he mentioned Scotland to do with the attack on the SNP, that the SNP, what the Scotland needed was a Labour-led government in Westminster. Hooray! And then the next one he got was the next one he got was when he said, and we will do no deals with the SNP. Another standing ovation. So two standing ovations within about 60 seconds when he put the boot into the SNP, because he's, as you said quite rightly, Leslie, I think they've genuinely written off Scotland. They cannot see themselves making a comeback up here. Therefore, what they're having to do is establish themselves as the new centre party, if you like, picking out those elements which are interesting, renationalised rail, and the Great British Energy Company, which again gets massive support. So he's rolled back from that, taken to public ownership everything that he did when he was standing to be a Labour leader, but he's brought back these two policies, in particular to do with rail nationalisation, public ownership, and the creation of a Great British Energy Company, which had proved to be extremely popular in the country.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, that could usefully kick the SNP a little bit up absolutely the backside, some of this. Because, you know, what, so if it was, if it's so kind of not difficult to set up a public sector company, I mean, when he said that bit, you know, we're going to set up this Great British Energy thing, and okay, maybe it's only me, but anything that's labeled Great British anything is just whoomph, off it goes, but still, you know, and then said, and conference, it'll be a public sector company. Honestly, it was like, and look, look at the goodies we give you know, back in the old days, and maybe we're just cursed with being too old, Pat, you would have just taken it as read, obviously. Yes. What do you think? That the Labour Party was going to set up a private sector company called Great British Energy? I mean, geez. But anyway, this Great British Energy Company, you know, it's apparently it's going to go in and kind of, it, you know, it'll start perhaps setting up a few energy kind of projects of its own. It'll start actually producing a small scale generator, supposedly building up market shares, invest in new projects, and can become a significant credible generator. I mean, you know, they apparently say that they won't be able to guarantee every job created will be British, but it will be a national champion. They're modelling it apparently on firms like the French owned EDF, which ironically employs 10,000 people in the UK. You know, you could say, if you were just going to look at it a different way, that an even more successful company, you know, has been Statoil, that's changed to Equinor in Norway. But that would mean that you looked a little bit further north than your big rivals. But anyway, there's no point in getting away from it. They're actually putting something forward that just begins to put the public sector back into energy. So the SNP have to match it.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be matched or even outdone. And actually, they're also saying that the way they'll get the money from that is from a sovereign wealth fund.
Yes.
That Rachel Reeves is talking about setting up. So, I mean, if anyone wants to have a look at the Norway film that was done in 2019, we were talking about that with the Norwegians as to whether or not you could get enough money. You're never going to get the levels of money out of renewables that you got from the old oil and gas in terms of sovereign wealth. But it's definitely better than a kind of poke in the side of the face, you know. And if the British are talking about a sovereign wealth fund, here's the deal. If we don't get independence, that's the second time that our resources go south to basically fund whatever priorities come to the next Westminster government. And while some people might think, well, OK, but look, it's that nice man, Keir Starmer. Well, you know, look at the whole range of propositions that are being put forward, and look at whether or not they've got the chance of being in power for more than one shot. Yeah. I mean, really, this is structural stuff we're talking about now. Structurally, you know, nobody even has the decency to thank or acknowledge, at least, Alex Salmond's role in actually making wind the big deal that it is in Britain. Because whilst Labour were sort of slightly twiddling their thumbs and a bit scared of public opinion down south, and the Tories were absolutely opposed to wind power, Alex Salmond was rolling that out as First Minister in the teeth of all sorts of opposition. So it's our hydro and our wind power that's really at the base of a lot of the energy revolution. A lot of the tidal stuff is being tested in our waters. And this, if we want to watch this happen all over again and just watch yet another opportunity to do something constructive with energy on a permanent basis in this country whose settled will is for a social democracy and for a green revolution, then just rock on and let it all unravel. Because these guys, once you've set up structures with across the entire state, because, you know, remember the analysis has been so strongly and accurately that the collapse by the Tories of all the structures that bound the whole of the UK together into private companies is part of what's eroded faith in the UK. So the danger is that, you know, Labour come in and start to put the sound of Great British stuff together again and will create structures from which it will be harder to extract the Scottish components. So, you know, we need to get on with this. The SNP need to match and outdo this kind of proposition. But we also absolutely need to get on with independence so that we don't end up handing the next energy revolution to whoever the incumbent of number 10 is.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's the whole aspect of it, because, I mean, there were other things I picked out in it. I mean, the big rounds of applause for the NHS and the investment going to take, and that massive round of applause for the Green Prosperity Plan in the first 100 days that's all going to be put into action. And Starmer was actually very clear on the fact that, that what happened, he said, under the Tories, let's all remember the Labour Party's involvement in this and the development of North Sea oil and gas and the way that that was actually squandered and utilised to prop up the Tory economic policies that, that they then enacted. And you're absolutely right, Lizzie, because what we've got to work out about the fact is that when Labour comes into power, if they gain power in 2 years' time, and the mini-budget, the fiscal event, which was far more than that, on Friday seems to give it a massive boost to the Labour Party in terms of its the potential to become the next government. We're always hanging fire for when Labour will come in and attempt to sort out the absolute burrach, the mess that has been made of the UK economy, that is just, and petrol's been poured on that bonfire now by Friday's event. They will have to do certain things, and Starmer was very clear about this when he talked in code about fiscal responsibility, and we can't do good Labour things immediately, and there are things we're going to have to put on the back burner. That's just giving you the whole idea in advance that they will come in and do all the nasty work, set up infrastructure projects, set up this whole Green Revolution and Green Deal, and then along will come the next iteration of the Conservative Party, and they can do whatever they like, because that's the to and fro of Scotland being tied to the Westminster system, with the to and fro between Labour and Conservative, and our settled will, as you said, as a social democratic, progressive, leftist, centre, green country, is utterly dependent on the whim and the will of the English electorate.
And the other thing about this great British, the words Bake Off nearly coming. But anyway, energy company is, and this was also the difficulty with the Scottish government's proposal, is that it's just another public sector delivery company amongst a whole set, well, now dwindling because of the energy crisis. Does it ask whether or not you need to nationalise the rest of these private companies? Does it answer the question about the production of North Sea oil and gas going to the highest bidder? Does it answer any of the difficult questions? I mean, like, you're talking about this windfall tax, you know, and fair enough, you can keep talking about that. But what you're going to do is keep letting that dynamic continue.
Yes.
And then just claw back even more in tax from it. So at what point are you going to think about changing the way that a lot of these things operate at source, and not just add in another little Great British Energy company that's sitting beside you know, all the different kind of operators, Scottish and Southern, you know, all the, these different ones, many of whom until very recently were regularly done for mis-selling. And, you know, I just think there's a huge question mark now about what the shape of our future energy should be. And I wish we could actually have that conversation amongst the many things that I find myself trying to organise. That might yet one day be one. Is an open debate, since it clearly won't happen at SNP conference or anywhere, about what would be the best way to run energy. Should it be in a nationalised setup in an independent Scotland? Should we inherit the Scottish version of the Big Six and just let them keep operating the way they do at the moment? I mean, all these things will need to be discussed. And actually, the only good thing about all of this is that, you know, if Labour are in there sort of dabbling around in the corner of the field, it is going to make the SNP have to actually get back in and come up with something a lot more concrete. So, you know, fair enough on that. I see there was also, you know, like the biggest other hurrah, another big hurrah was, well, there was two bits actually where he was kind of attacking the Tory and I think Liz Truss's part in a book that suggests explicitly that the working class just don't graft hard enough. And he sounded fairly sort of convincing at that point. There was quite a bit of, you know, hurrah for that. Then he talked about the dream of owning your own home slipping away. He pledged this 70% home ownership target. Now that with all these targets, it was the same as the huge ovation there was for a whole list of 10,000 nurses and 10,000, whatever it was. There was lots of statistics. It got drowned out, actually, and they kind of, you know, everybody on their feet, you know, raging their head off as if actually Scotland had finally beaten Ukraine and got to the top of their group tonight. Okay.
Yes.
And the thing is, this is all very well, all these targets, but God damn it, the devil's in the detail. Everyone's come in with targets for extra nurses. Everyone. And so the question then is pay. How are you going to manage it? How are you going to do it with Brexit? Because that's what's cut off vast amounts of all staff to all sectors. But you can't talk about it because you're going to get Brexit done. You know, all of these, you can't whistle up people who take 7 years to train in a day. Yeah, they'll go through the we need to get people back, you know, who have left the profession. Look at the state of it, actually. You know, it's a massively stressful thing for anybody to think that they were going to come back to. I mean, it's massive. You know, this is so easy to just run off these targets. And the same thing would be true with the 70% home ownership.
Yeah.
I don't see how you're going to get affordable home ownership when you're just basically pump priming volume house builders to produce stuff that is basically, you know, and that's half the difficulty of where we are economically at the moment, because almost everyone is indebted in a way they weren't the last time we had this level of crash in the pound and this level of inflation. Yeah. The amount of indebtedness that people have primarily because of mortgages that are actually unaffordable is massive. So that's fine, 70% home ownership. And once you're in an ownership mode, you know, a lot of people will want to do that because it gives some sort of security until you see the level of repossessions we're going to get from inflation rocketing up and people putting two and two together quite quickly and seeing that it's the government that's basically done that. But having said that, there was a massive cheer when he said there'll be no buy to let or letting second homeowners come in first. How you actually achieve that will be very interesting to kind of find out. But it was a very popular thing. That little run was, and then he ended up with the Labour Party or the Party of Home Ownership today. Anybody who thinks that the question of security in your own home isn't probably the number one thing in Scotland and Britain is kidding themselves. And actually, that is not really being dealt with very well in Scotland at the moment at all. So actually, there's another thing that, you know, if there's a little bit of some sort of challenge on these sorts of credentials that bears any thinking about, and you would need to see how any of these are to be achieved. That's not a bad thing because, you know, the SNP have had that space all to themselves, really, and have been kind of resting on their laurels.
No, but I mean, that was something, again, it's interesting you pick up on that whole point, because there were points through that I kept thinking to myself, well, I can see a lot of people who are on the progressive left in Scotland going, yeah, that's I like that. That sounds good. That sounds excellent. And absolutely appropriately, that does throw down the challenge to the SNP to take it up and turn around and say, well, what will your response be? Because as you rightly said, they've occupied that space in Scotland totally unchallenged by the Labour Party. And it was an interesting one, though. Again, it's Starmer pivoting, and I thought, and triangulating quite smartly and aiming his message entirely at the people who he thinks he's going to vote for him. And it was, again, I've got to come to it, because, I mean, I just seeing the imagery, I mean, at the Labour Party conference with the union flag logos.
See, just before we get to the union, yes. Jack, just because this is my last little thought on his actual mm-hmm. speech, that the bit that just made my teeth absolutely was, you know, this talk about I was brought up in a pebble dash semi,
with a
Ford Cortina.
Yeah.
And, you know, we basically, our phone was cut off at one point in the 70s, which basically, this is just, it didn't quite say this, which makes him working class.
Yeah.
And I just, what is this? You know, there's another point later when he talked about, you know, that he was born without privilege. And he said, this working class impatience drives me in this job as well. I mean, I know we could, this is a dangerous thing to get into, because what is working class and what isn't? But honestly, Sir Keir Starmer, it's not you. You know, you don't come across as working class. Just having a car in the 70s probably puts you in a certain sort of bracket.
Yeah.
What is this thing? Because if he could just, you know, just accept who he is, he's a well-paid professional who sounds posh, kind of, looks a bit posh. And this, all this desperate attempt, you know, to kind of talk about his tool-making father and, you know, the whole family, you know, constantly trying to make this look like he's doing with the kids and he's basically one, you know, working class dude. When he just, you know, this every time he says it, you have his image, his voice, his manner, juxtapose it so profoundly. And when you think about, I mean, I don't really know what Nicola Sturgeon's background is, apart from I think she grew up in Irvine, but I suspect she's probably got more of a shout on working class credentials. But I don't think I've ever heard her make any point about it.
No,
and you know, that's what happens when you are the thing. You very rarely make a big deal about it, because it's pretty evident from the way you speak and carry yourself and everything, actually, and sort of. Me thinks you doth protest too much, Keir, and I just wish you'd get over it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, actually, to be perfectly honest, if he'd stuck with the joke that he began at the beginning, which is the past two years, all the changes, all the hard work, and I'm thinking, oh, God, he's going to... And he says, yes, and Arsenal are now top of the league. I thought, tick the box, that's how you do it. Do you know what I mean? Be authentic. But for the people he's speaking to, Leslie, I genuinely think that was a smart way to do it. And he then led into the whole thing about the Hillsborough justice for the 96, justice for 97, the Hillsborough law being on the start, being brought forward. Yeah. When Labour,
it's a wee thing, but if you look online, I did notice it. There's been quite a wee bit of annoyance in one corner about the fact that the Sun were given credentials for the Labour Party for the first time in a long time, and that Keir Starmer is actually writing for the Sun now.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's the same thing again. If you're going to claim something, you need completely squeaky clean credentials behind you, because all you do is shine for the small, probably, but very committed group of people who are in the Hillsborough camp, which is actually the whole of Liverpool. And, you know, for the he'll think small group of people who are progressives in Scotland, 50% of 5 million, you know, all these people that sort of know their own parish know that's not quite right. You know, so yeah, there was a big, you know, cheer for that. I mean, there was a cutaway at one point to Andy Burnham at another of these kind of claims of something, looking extremely unimpressed. And I was racking my brains to think, what's the angle there from Manchester's point of view? Because I have a feeling that quite a number of those things sounded pretty good on the front face of it. But fair enough, you know, a lot of politics is conducted on the face of it. So, you know, from the point of view of who he, as you say, who he needed to appeal to, and, you know, all the BBC lot are kind of going, well, that was quite a good, you know, trip, because, I mean, they're used to hearing people who are just insane.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the relief there must be from having people, you know, a guy stand up and give a speech that sort of roughly speaking matches the world as they used to know.
Yes.
It must be kind of giddying, actually, you know, after having to listen to.
Yes,
I was on a Zoom call with a lass in Iceland, and she was, you know, it's just the same thing again. She was saying these people are just disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the quasi quartile Liz Truss mob. And she said, what's happening to you? You know, I mean, I said, yeah, it's like, it, you know, would you know what it's like having to watch all this? Is like you being in Iceland and being run by Donald Trump. And you would, you know, shudder, shudder. But that's what it's like. I can hardly bring myself to watch now, you know, the latest on it. Although doubtless we will now embark on the horror.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, as I say, and it was Starmer is making a very, very clear pitch. As I say, but I never heard, and I'm old enough to remember this. I don't think, not old enough to remember Clement Attlee, but I don't think Clement Attlee ever actually had to try to stress his working class origins when there were none. Nor, and Wilson, Callaghan, you know, they didn't feel they had to go down that route. And Tony Blair never tried it on either. So, I mean, you know, if these are the people he looks back to in terms of the 45, 64, 97, these are his heroes and political heroes and for Labour moments. He didn't need to do that, but he just seems impelled to do it constantly.
Well, there was also this thing where when he walked out, I mean, I don't know, it's that there's just everything seems to be not genuine. You know, it's like watching a virtual, a sort of version of something rather than an actual event where people are genuinely excited, because he walked out this at the side. And I mean, again, these things are tremendously orchestrated. It looked very sparse and very lukewarm. And, you know, I think when Nicola Sturgeon does her stuff, she doesn't exactly sort of dive bomb the middle of the audience, but she usually kind of comes down and out. And, you know, what the camera sees is just loads of people around her. And she looks like, and people look, you know, they look far more genuinely excited. And that's the comparison I think a Scott would make. I mean, obviously, but I mean, even the Liz Truss stuff, you know, I mean, the barking Tories seem to be quite excited about her, you know, I mean, there seem to be some genuine something going on in the room. But I mean, some of the cutaways, people have to remember the camera's on you, honey. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's really quite easy to know that that's the case, because given the angle of some of the cutaways, the cameraman must have been right beneath their nostrils. And yet Ed Miliband was sort of standing with a real glay kick, kind of, hey, that was magic, kind of looking, you know, a kind of real.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just all looked really forced to me. But you know, if you watch it tonight, folks, on the news, you will not get a sense of any of this. You will simply get that Keir Starmer sealed the deal and sort of sounded like a proper prime minister and didn't put his foot in his mouth and came up with a few new ideas. And basically everybody's 17 point lead on the Tories at the moment. And look, you know, let's just now go over to the latest collapse in the value of sterling and the number of mortgage companies that are now not lending certain sorts of mortgages because the whole thing is collapsing so quickly. You know, it'll do well enough for them. But I mean, all eyes now on the SNP. This seems to be a real honey of a conference next week. They need to deliver.
Yeah, well, I mean,
next month.
Next month, which is
not long away.
Not long away. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I had a look at the SNP annual conference agenda. So the good news is that the raising the school start age is in there. So that's a big tick to that.
It is.
Kindergarten.
Where it's located is interesting, because it's after the speech by the education secretary who was in the Herald pushing back on the whole idea.
Mm.
So there is a possibility that she comes on, basically says, oh, look, everything's kind of all right. And, you know, we're just transitioning towards this. And in effect, a lot of primary one really is like a kindergarten. So, you know, you don't really need to do this and blah, 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 and just muds the water sufficiently to make it, you know. But we'll see. I mean, I think that, you know, the folk who are pushing the motion are sort of aware they're going to have to make a bit of a go of it. I should say, I'm sorry to keep zipping backwards and forwards, but you know, the other big interesting thing from Labour, and this is another of these ones that won't get much of a highlight in England, is that despite the Labour conference overwhelmingly backing a motion for proportional representation, Keir Starmer's lot are saying they're going to ignore it.
Yeah.
Which is extraordinary. I mean, you know, people may remember that this was, you know, every conference that this comes up, because it is easily the most popular motion amongst the rank and file year after year. And last year, you may remember, 80% of the constituency party delegates voted for PR, but it was defeated after mostly unions opposed the move. And now the big change has been three of the big unions have changed their stance: Unite, Unison, and also the communication workers, and probably other smaller ones. That's more than half of union votes. So that's what shifted it. And despite all of that, Starmer's, you know, that Labour has made it clear that that is just not going to be a priority for them. How can you actually... Fair enough, they've got quite a lot of stuff. There could be an actual, well, there will be an actual financial and fiscal emergency by the time somebody comes in, if it's them. But still, you know, you just can't, this is still this kind of rolling to the idea of we're going to get a big proper majority.
Yep.
Doing deals with anyone is a form of weakness. It brings you back to the sort of the SNP, they're disgusting scum. If I could just get them off the end of my fingers, I would kind of approach to people who are as blimmin' progressive as you, and totally contrasting with the kind of way that the Welsh Labour Party are actually embracing, you know, people who are fellow, you know, if you like, fellow progressives in the form of Plaid Cymru, and have none of this vindictive kind of, you know, disgust almost in their voice when it comes to the idea of collaboration. Now, the opposition to the idea that it's one singer, one song, winner takes all, devil take the hindmost, that is the most British characteristic you can probably get. And it is what has brought the whole of Britain down, because the real world doesn't work like that. You know, the most successful societies, economies, everything collaborate, you know. So it looks like on that one, there's, you know, that means we're going to continue with just everything we've grown to know and love, people not voting for who they want because they have to kind of calculate what impact it'll have. 10% of seats that haven't changed hands since Queen Victoria. Yep, that's the modern Labour Party's vision of, you know, the next couple of governments if they're successful in winning. But I interrupt. So we're back we've looked at the old kindergarten, school age thing, school which is very one. Married to needing better kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing I noticed was there was a complaint about the fact that there was no specific motions, you know, on the agenda to do with independence. However, if you're a really boring nerd like myself, you actually go through it and there's a whole lot of stuff that explicitly mentions 2023 in terms of it, because a couple of the other things was the fact that there was going to be a, you know, had to be a social media strategy and communication strategy centrally developed by the SNP, and social media officers had to be elected and put in place for every branch, and there could be a communication strategy for the campaign. And I know that was something that you've been talking about in groups you've been speaking to, Leslie, about the fact of visibility, and that you can't just leave things, you know, not to fester, but just to be in abeyance simply because the SNP are not doing anything. But it would appear to be there is a groundswell of opinion, put in this very mild way, that seems to be suggesting to the SNP from the people who forward for these propositions that they really have to get the act together to get materials out to branches. There ought to be a social media strategy. There ought to be a communication strategy put in place now in readiness for October 2023.
Yeah. There isn't a proper debate about independence in this, and it's, that's disappointing. There is a thing about having this conduct thing. I'm flipping through trying to find which of, as you say, there's bitty bits in their sort of internal thing more, which basically is wants everybody to sign up to be good boys and girls and not be, you know, sniffy to people. But I mean, you know, this is just so much more that needs to be done. And actually... Yeah, I wrote a piece in, I can't remember what day today is. It must have been in last week's National, really just saying, is the Yes movement visible and impactful? And I'm afraid the answer to both of those is no. And part of it is, of course, there's all sorts of reasons, the mainstream media, COVID, bloody, bloody, blah. But one main reason, I think, is because the movement is sitting watching and waiting for the government to make moves. Now, just think of these words a minute, movement, government. This is daft because a movement should be moving. You know, it has the freedom. It doesn't have a day job. It doesn't have to produce, you know, rigorously gone through legislation. It's a movement. So when something happens, it's able to move to express feeling about it. It doesn't have to wait for a government which may feel, you know, I don't even want to have to get my head around why the Scottish government doesn't organise big events around pivotal moments. But it doesn't. So, OK, that's the size of it. In which case, we just need to do this ourselves. Yes, movement, if you feel part of it. So that didn't happen on Brexit Day, 31st of Jan 2019. So the Edinburgh Yes Hub and myself organised something. We got 3,000 people. We got the cameras were going to be there because it was a moment. Keir Starmer's talking about Labour's moment. That was a real moment. And if we had gone on, as we did, about Scotland being dragged out of the EU against our will, how weird would it have looked if people who were angry about being dragged out against their will were not visible somewhere that day looking annoyed and cheery? Because that's kind of what we do quite well, a cheery, annoyed look, right, with flags and pipes. So here we go again, folks. We're cruising up to the next big moment like that, a predictable moment where the cameras will be here, and it is when the Supreme Court verdict is announced. Now, if it goes our way, dancer, you know, and we should be out being extremely happy because we've now got the go-ahead to have a referendum, right? So we need to show that we're happy. If it goes the other way, which some argue is more likely, we have to look annoyed. Because what that is essentially, you know, the legal system saying to Scotland, you can't leave. Mm-hmm. There is no legal way for you to do hee-haw. You can have as many elections as you want. But, you know, there's an attempt to go through a legal process and that's the door slammed in your face. Now, many people may want to have more elaborate arguments about what that represents. A failure in strategy, perhaps, for Nicola Sturgeon. You know, other things, right? That's other people's dance space to argue. What the Yes movement needs to do is create the obvious narrative, which is we're walled in then, are we? Yeah. And so I'll be certainly organising something outside Holyrood for that day, whenever it is. There'll be, you know, more about that soon and how people can join, but it has to happen. And these things have to happen in conjunction with when there's an actual story, not a pre-designed Saturday so you can have a quick swally and a pop into Markey's on the way, right? Which, mind you, that can have its place as well. But I think what we all need to get better at is impactful stuff so that it's actually chiming with a moment when Scotland is in the spotlight. And every time Scotland's in the spotlight in utterly predictable ways like this, it needs to be populated with annoyed, cheery people with banners and pipes, because that's the way you get a narrative over that we are not going quietly. Yeah. And what is at the moment, you know, a couple of things that prompted a lot of this in me, but one was chairing an event of a Zoom event of Europe for Scotland, where there was, I think we talked about it, you know, there was lots of contributions from different countries. But I think it may have been the Italian chap who said, look, I'm willing to sort of knock my pan in for Scotland when the time comes, in an Italian kind of phrasing. But he said, are you? And that's what I've been going around. I've been, you know, in about four or five meetings in the last week around the place. And I've just said to it, and every time I've said that to people, it's astonishing. About 2/3 of the room is nodding before I finish the sentence. They know how not visible we are. So personally speaking, I don't want to hear any more complaints about the mainstream media. You know, yeah, it's just don't put your energy there. Let's put our energy into something that will happen and where we have to be visible. Let's learn from that and repeat. And, you know, if people want to, if you're too far from Edinburgh, there's lots of groups all the ones I went to speak to who are now thinking about significant places near them that they will get their act together to do something at that day and contact local media. So, you know, it's like you can do this or you cannot do this, but you certainly can't sit back and just say, well, you know, it's up to the Scottish government, which is essentially the SNP now is the Scottish government in its way that it's operating. So fine, you know, that's a dance space they're inhabiting. And that's why, you know, many of these interesting motions are about how to change the structure of Scottish society, which is their mm-hmm. shout. I'm not letting them off the hook, but I'm just not wasting time on a hook I can't shift.
Yeah, so, I mean, I go back to Leslie, but was it about 3 years ago that you and I both attended an event in Dundee, which was meant to be about developing skills amongst the people who were involved in the Yes Movement, about getting the message out there. And I did a wee piece on shooting and editing on your smartphone and stuff like that. And I think that's the sort of thing that ought to be going on, because people are often... All you need to do is introduce people to the methods and techniques that are, look, if I can master them, they're really quite simple, and about the way to construct a story, construct a narrative, know what a story is, get your media sorted out, up and uploaded. And as you say, forget about trying to get this into the mainstream media, get our own media going. I think it needs a lot. It needs events. It needs people to go out there and train and develop people and engage with people and reveal to them what they can actually do themselves. And I think that's the way to grasp it. And if you give people the information, give people the techniques, people can do it and can do it really, really well.
Yeah, well, I've sort of undertaken to try to get some of this together behind the scenes. So I'm in touch with quite a number of groups. But I think since you sound like you volunteered to do that one again, Pat.
Yes, oh yeah.
It would be quite good to just have a special session on that, because, you know, this is like the equivalent of this thing of if a tree falls in a forest and nobody heard it, did it make a sound? If you go through all of this and do your press release and contact people and get yourself organized somewhere significant and then get everyone rallied on a day when it will inevitably be raining, when we've been given 24 hours notice of the verdict, and you don't take film and you don't take even a photo, and the person who's got the Facebook account can't load it up to Facebook, then it didn't happen. That's how bad it is. It didn't happen. And folks, having been around and with the best will in the world, the number of places that have now got three Facebook groups because somebody from 2014 is hanging on to the old one. Yeah. I know this is difficult and it takes a lot of personal skills and whatever, but jings, you know, we've got to get to a stage where just these basic things are sorted out. And this is the time to do it. There's a small window here before the Supreme Court sits on October the 10th and then may take, you know, there's many people with expert insights that will, you know, contribute thoughts. But right now, hard to say, but very possibly 2 weeks and very possibly a bit longer. So this is not a tomorrow, next week job. This is a now. Get your group together. Get the Facebook and Twitter accounts active with people who like social media.
Yes.
And think about TikTok, which I have. I'm starting to do, I said I would, a little account, which is what independence means to me. So I've recorded one fantastic person. I meant to do more, but I was knackered by the time I'd stopped each event and just didn't manage to get it together. But, you know, we need to get little stories of people just being sincere, not snazzy, not, you know, I'm worried about facts and figures. Just don't do that. No. We need this stuff out there. And it's up to you listening to skill yourself up, because let's face it, this is the future anyway, and you're not going to lose much by kind of walking into it.
No. Well, I mean, I just look at the example. I mean, this is, again, because of my interest, the number of young people who are young men in the main who are doing vlogs for football. They've just done it themselves and they load this stuff up to YouTube. They go to football matches. They interview people. They comment. They do vox pops. And it's all happening out there already. And again, that's the sort of thing we should be tapping into. Meanwhile, I mean, while the talk of independence goes on, there has been a leak. Yes, there's been a leak of the Gordon Brown Save the Union plan. I don't know if you've seen this, Leslie. It's I don't know about you. I'm completely and I nearly swore there, totally underwhelmed by this. I mean, he's had this all this time to go away and think about it, and we kept being promised this is the super duper Save the Union. Ian Murray's coming out and saying this is going to be absolutely brilliant. We're going to reform the United Kingdom. So, yet again, the Labour Party is considering abolishing the House of Lords and replacing it with a Senate of Regions and Nations. Well, how long have we been hearing that one? Devolved stamp duty. Well, hold on, Paul.
Yeah.
Powers for local people to promote parliamentary bills. Yeah. Constitutional guarantee of social and economic rights. And that was the one that got to me. How in the heck, when you've got a partially written, wholly uncoded constitution, which can be amended at any point by any subsequent government at Westminster, can you constitutionally guarantee any social and economic rights? Because the next lot can come in just and say, nah, we're going to overturn that. They're going to give mayors powers over education, transport and research funding. And one of the things that came out of it that The Guardian revealed was that shadow ministers are sceptical about these plans because they're too radical. So there you go, folks. That's the offer that Gordon Brown has been beavering away on for the past, 18 months or something like that.
Wow. And, you know, then stick that back in with the, yeah, we've just had this overwhelming vote in favour of proportional representation, mm-hmm. but nah, we're not doing it. They don't believe constitutional stuff matters.
Yeah.
You know,
it just gets in the way, you see. Well, we're actually, the whole point about actually developing a progressive society is you've got to get your constitution correct. You've got to. Anyway, but that was the Gordon
Brown.
Wow, ground.
How underwhelming that was.
Absolutely. I mean, I kept thinking to myself, no, I was really, really, really interested in considering the fact that Gordon Brown is not stupid. He is an intellectual. I mean, he's written very, very well in his younger days about the state of the nation. And it's an absolute nothing. I mean, it really is. I mean, when devolving stamp duty comes up as the big deal, you're going, well, yeah, we've already got that, pal.
But that's amazing, because that's just like a huge mistake.
Yeah.
You know, just a factual mistake.
Well, otherwise it'll go to Wales. Yeah. So that's them sorted out. They get to deal with stamp duty, because currently they're lumped in with England in terms of those regulations. But, I mean, there's absolutely nothing in there in terms of Scotland, except the Senate.
So it sounds like basically all the Labour kind of thing is basically that all boats rise when Labour sorts out the whole of UK with its Great Britain, British Bake Off thingies. Well, yeah, fine.
Yeah.
But you know, the thing is, I mean, I'm trying to think of where I was when, you know, the point was made that, I mean, for example, I think it's true that there is an all under one banner march in Edinburgh on October the 1st, I think, this weekend anyway. But there's also an enough is enough march in Glasgow.
Right.
And I think there's a whole series of enough is enough events all over Scotland on the same day. And that I think that the all under one banner thing was in first. But either that's how confident enough is enough feel, or else they didn't notice. And there's the thing, you know, that, I mean, as this is not like a game, as people are just papping it now, watching the pound plummet, you know, interest rates going through the roof, inflation going through the roof, no prospect of anybody riding to the rescue because they're just promising more. And Kwasi Kwarteng, I mean, that bizarre moment where he actually walked out the front door, which, you know, all the old hacks are saying, God, doesn't he realise you don't walk out the front door? Because especially when you've, you know, produced a howler like last Friday's kind of budget, not budget thing. He walked out, and of course, you know, the place is going to hell in a handcart. And some wee guy who's standing there, can't believe his luck, got the camera. The camera's trotting backwards in front of him, trying not to fall over. And the reporter's going, what about this? What about this? What about this? And Kwarteng hasn't quite mastered the sort of, I'm just not looking as if you exist look yet, because he quite hasn't been there long enough. So he looks as awkward as he is, half answers, then doesn't, then pretends he can't see them, then looks at them. I know that's a small thing, right, in the great scheme of everything. But it's like these guys have now not got a clue about what they've unleashed, except that you've got to now wait for the 23rd of November for everyone to find out what the next iteration of the chaos is.
Yeah. I mean, Lord David Frost was on the Today programme yesterday, where he said, well, nobody could have predicted that this was going to happen. Can I just hold on? Nobody could predict the pound was going to fall. This is a personal story, and it's an anecdote, you know, just from me. But as Glenn Campbell has now identified, you can speak to your friends, and that these can come part of mainstream media's stories. I went in to get my euros about 4 weeks ago. The reason I went in was I took a look at the fact that it was likely to be Liz Truss. Mm-hmm. I knew her policies, and I thought, I'm buying me euros before the pound actually plummets like a stone, which it has done against the euro, not as much as it's done against the dollar. I went into the little exchange place in the Overgate in Dundee and said to the girl, I'm in buying me euros. To which the lovely young lady says, aye, you're worried about Liz Truss being elected leader. And that was the lassie behind the counter.
Yeah, in the figured exchange. It out.
But figured that out. The other thing that people are going on about is that this guy O'Day, who actually made a fortune on a killing with Brexit, is now just as a banker, has shorted the pound. They had this meeting. If you needed a meeting as a banker and as someone who was invested, an investment banker like that, to know that the pound was going to, as I say, drop like a stone, you're not much of one. If I'd have had the money, I would have shorted the pound. Because everybody knew what was coming. I mean, our old friend, Mark Blythe, Professor Mark Blythe, friend of the podcast, he actually said at one point, he says, you know, I'm actually coming to the conclusion that they reckon they're out in 2 years and they're just doing as much as they can to line their pockets before they actually get kicked out. He says, that's an almost serious point. He said he could not believe what they were doing. Every single economist, a reputable economist, has turned around and said, this is insanity what they're doing. And what you've got with the fact of the pound dropping, interest rates are going to go up. And people who have got mortgages, just as Rishi Sunak said, are going to be hammered as the mortgages have now quadrupled. And they're going to go through the roof. And as you said, all these mortgages being taken off the shelf. So when Lord David Frost turned and said nobody could have predicted what was going to happen, everybody predicted what was going to happen.
Including explicitly Rishi Sunak, actually,
yes,
who said that, you know, that the vultures will be circling if Liz Truss wins, because with that package, which even people at the World at One are now throwing at the few supporters of Truss that will actually come on the wireless to explain what the hell is going on. So it's a rummel do. And yet, actually, I was listening as well. I'm trying to remember who was actually on. David Lammy, the Shadow Foreign Secretary, mm-hmm. who was very swift to say that given the level of kind of chaos and everything here, there won't be another general election until the very last mm-hmm. kind of minutes here, which was his way of saying, so you wouldn't expect me to come out with a fully costed kind of, mm-hmm. you know, response to all the things you're talking about. Now, I mean, it's a terrible thing because the public needs something done about this really, really quickly, because these, you know, you can't get to a stage where you just hope that there's going to be worse and worse trouble for people from which many families will never recover.
Yeah.
Just to sort of make a point, which actually point is sort of fairly well understood, I would think, in Scotland. I'm not sure it's just more utter misery that's going to actually do things. It's also the case that perhaps the SNP are looking for a longer period to ramp, you know, work their mm-hmm. scenario up of coming through the Supreme Court judgment and then going for their de facto referendum, plebiscite referendum thing. They're possibly wanting something that isn't immediate. But God, we need some immediate thing to happen because this is just desperate. You know, and so it feels like a very bad situation when the two main opposition parties, the SNP and Labour, yeah, they'll be going in and saying, you know, they're calling for a change of government immediately and everything. And yeah, everyone will see the stories that there are already letters coming into the 1922 yes. committee about Liz Truss. But that doesn't get you a new government. That gets you potentially a new leader, as we all know. And just more stasis while it all happens, if it will, which, of course, looks very unlikely to happen, because how crazy would that be? But in the meantime, just, you know, Britain just falls to pieces and we're in there. You know,
it's yes.
like our folk are going to fall to pieces. So we've got to get ourselves onto a front foot and organising in the knowledge that this next election will be just unbelievably important, and it has to be framed well and powerfully, and the groundwork of the thinking has to go in now, and there has to be a better set of proposals to deal with the multiple failures of the British state over decades that are currently being put forward by the SNP. And the Yes movement needs to understand that it's a movement that swings separate from the Scottish government and begins to look annoyed and cheery when significant things happen. And if there was a vote of confidence and somehow this government fell, then everyone just has to get with it and deal with an emergency general election, because we can't let people go to the dogs.
No, and that's the key point. I wish Keir Starmer's working class impatience that he waxed lyrical about actually spread to the fact of that people like David Lammy becoming out and being utterly specific about the policies they would put in place to actually take care of things now. And that's key to it, because I did hear him say that, oh, look, they've taken on board the things that we already suggested. But it is a complete trashing of the economy. And as we've seen from the past, and I've been through this, as you have, Leslie, several times now, when you trash the economy, it's people at the lowest end of the economy, who are in the most perilous positions, and the communities that are in the most perilous positions, who suffer most. And I can only say it's just not on. It really isn't. And we have to be prepared to actually take action to actually try and stop this.
Yeah. But I also, wrote a thing for the Herald saying, amazingly, you know, when Labour came out on Sunday saying that they also would reinstate the 45 pence yes. tax rate that the Tories have just got rid of, which actually, you know, the Scottish government just have. You know, I mean, we're now, yeah. If you're going to chuck in other bits of national income, national insurance advances for the highest taxpayers, there'll be effectively a top rate of 48% in Scotland compared to 42% in mm-hmm. England. Now, there was somebody whose name I've actually forgotten, who said that he's thinking of shifting to England.
Oh, Roddy Dunlop.
On the strength of that. The lawyer, QC, yeah. or now, I think we now have to call them KCs, since we've even mentioned that the Queen
KC and the
has
Sunshine
died.
Band. Yeah.
So anyway, so he's off-ski. I mean, see, there's the point. He's not off-ski. He's thinking about it. Right. And this regularly happens. You can think about it. And if you want the world to know that level of greed is what motivates things yeah. like where you want to live and what you consider your identity and which country you favour, you know, I don't know that you're going to be really top of the pops just with that set of priorities. But still, I think that Nicola needs to come out really fighting on this one for what a progressive taxation regime actually does for a country, because it's not one that Keir Starmer didn't go in there. And he didn't mention, I think, his 45%.
No.
I didn't hear it. So, no. You know, they're not taking the Tories on that one. And you've got to make the case, you know, that this is there was somebody who tweeted, I didn't want to name them in the article, and I wish I could remember who it was now. But he says, I'm happy to pay more tax in Scotland. Mm-hmm. He's a professional. My three children all graduated from Scottish universities with no tuition fees, saving us £108,000. As a family, we also benefit from free prescriptions, as well as more doctors, nurses, teachers and police officers per head of the population, not to mention free personal care, bus travel for the old and young. This is the point. You have stuff as a oneer. And Scotland is a welfare state. Despite the best efforts of the Westminster government, the Scots understand you have to invest in well-being to maintain the whole country's social fabric, just like our successful European neighbours. That's the way you do it. So, you know, that's a different direction. It's not just this tax chasm, as the Daily Express put it, where that's opening up. It's mm-hmm. the whole package of what you get if you live in this country versus if you live in, you know, loads of money, Del Boy, England, to be blunt, as you say, none of the economists can actually agree with a single word yeah. of what's come out of, but there's the problem again. You might say there's no difference between, you know, Nicola Sturgeon and Keir Starmer then on that 45 pence tax, but this is a very important one. Keir Starmer is a party leader talking a good game. Nicola Sturgeon is a first minister playing it.
Yes.
And that is a big, big difference, because actually the only government in the British Isles that's currently in tune with public economic market opinion on the pointlessness of these sort of fat cats tax cuts is the Scottish government.
Yeah.
You know, and that matters because it's not words. It's something that's been delivered already with the support of the entire, apart from the Tories, Scottish Parliament.
Yeah.
And this all matters because that's how you show you can sort of effortless. It's a bit like the kind of working class credentials. When you've got a real settled will, you just don't need to kind of go on about it much. It's pretty obvious to people in Scotland you would want to have a progressive tax regime, but you still need to go out now and make the case for that and claim the leadership that Scotland unquestionably has. Now, I mean, OK, the Welsh are also attacked the tax changes. Mark Drakeford said that they would embed unfairness across the UK, but the Senedd has to use the UK Treasury's income tax rates. So that 45%, mm-hmm. that 45 pence top rate will be scrapped in Wales as well. And there's many folk in Wales speculating that the government, the Labour-led government, will be campaigning for the same tax powers as Scotland to be able to stop it.
Yeah.
And that's and just by the way, the Scottish government already has an intermediate band matching
right.
the UK Chancellor's new income tax starter rate. So it matters that everybody knows this. The Welsh haven't got the powers to do what we got the powers to do. How did we get that? By campaigning.
Yeah.
We've got actually the best, still not a blinder, but we've got the most progressive taxation in the whole UK, despite all the constraints. So Nicola Sturgeon needs to walk out, emulate Liz Truss in one respect only, her boldness, and go straight out and claim that and explain the strategy of a welfare state when she, you know, gets the opportunity. I'd love to see her on TV. Why not do a speech to the nation? You know, mm-hmm. every time you don't do it, you don't respond to an immediate crisis, you lose the opportunity. You know, the moment to do it was sometime after that non-appalling budget on Friday, because folk would really be tuned in and listening. I'm sure that there will be a lot of people watching the keynote speech when it comes around on October the 10th, but that's 2 weeks away. You know, there's an option to just be bold and get out there now. And I wish sometimes she would take it, because she's a very convincing performer.
Yeah, because when she's been interviewed about it, she's been absolutely direct about the pernicious nature of that budget. And I feel like saying to Lisa Nandy, you know, this is the regressive nationalism you think is nasty, Lisa, where there's a progressive taxation system, where there is still a commitment to a welfare state and a fair social security system, where there are things like the baby box, where there are things like the child payments, and there is still an attempt to operate within the framework of the restrictions of the devolved settlement to create a more progressive society in Scotland, despite the best intentions of the Conservative government. I'll also be intrigued to see how the Scottish government actually uses the windfall that's going to be coming to us because of the changes that are taking place in the taxation system in England. It'll be very, very interesting to see how the Scottish government utilises it. And the other thing, as I say, is which I really despise, is this immediate knee-jerk reaction. And it goes right across through the newspapers and television and radio. The English taxation system has been changed. The markets have said this is an appalling thing to do. An analyst, not the OBR, because I guess they weren't allowed to comment on it because it was just a mini budget, but the IFS has turned around and said the only people who will benefit from this are people who are on over £150,000 a year. They're going to get them to go to make out of it. And the millionaires are going to make £55,000 a year. Why are you not introducing these terrible changes up here in Scotland? You know, that has been the narrative. And Sturgeon, to give her a due, came out and actually, when she was asked, gave a reaction to it. But I think you're absolutely right. There is get on the front foot and get out there. And
I mean, this is a crisis moment.
Yeah.
And you're allowed, you know, you're allowed as a First Minister to decide that you're going to directly speak to people because it's an emergency situation. And because there's confusion about what will and won't come our way. And to now that there's been a couple of days, to think about how that money will be spent to reassure people that it'll be with the kind of values that people mm-hmm. keep voting for in this country. But anyway, not that anyone will be listening to the likes of us.
No.
But yes, you know, I mean, yeah. the one thing that Liz Truss has got is that brass neck, kind of completely unapologetic, slightly guffy looking you know, goofy, rather looking sort of stance and kind of straight out there, you know, with no hesitation, apology, anything. And I mean, it is an annoying package, but,
yeah,
you know, there's a point where everyone can learn from, you know, from what's around them. And the immediacy of the whole thing means that there needs to be a kind of freshening up and an immediacy from the SNP.
Yep. Well, watch this space. Let's see if it happens. So that's us back. And I said to Leslie, I've been in Italy, so I was going to talk about the Italian election. That can wait.
No, it probably can't, because honestly, it'll be utterly boring by the time it comes around the next time. So go on, quick.
Well, no, what it was is that there's been a whole lot of hoo-ha going on about what's been going on in Italy in terms of the fascists that have been elected there. I mean, and yeah, their origins were with the MSI, who were the post-1945, we're Mussolini's men and women, but, you know, we're not really Mussolini's men and women. They then went eventually morphed and they joined up with Silvio Berlusconi's mob and dropped out of that in 2012. And the Fratelli d'Italia, who finished up as the biggest single party in Italy, are going to be fronting the government. But I took a look at their policies, and it was really interesting when people say, oh, look at these fascists taking over. They're anti-immigration. Yeah. They're going to have a naval blockade to stop illegal migration. They're offshore asylum processing out with EU. Well, for people who are getting all worried about fascism in Italy, do those three policies not actually strike you as being fairly familiar from the current Conservative Party? Anti-immigration, let's have naval blockades, that was pretty Patel's thing. Offshore asylum processing out with the EU. Rwanda, anyone? You know? Yeah. So, and them, plus the Swedish Democrats, are part of the European Conservative and Reformist Group, founded by the UK Tories in 2009. You know, so and there seems to be this whole thing about what happened in Sweden is exactly the same as happened in Italy. They've got this, they're nativists, yes. They are both Eurosceptic about expansion of the European federal project, but both want to remain in the European Union. Both of them are for more defence spending. And both of them are for both the Swedish Democrats and the Fratelli d'Italia are not on the side of Putin in terms of the Ukraine. So, again, I was saying, as I say, if people, they are not nice people, but are exactly the same kind of not nice people, you know, when you look at their policies, as the current Conservative Party. So when they describe themselves as centre-right, they are part of that same grouping that the UK Tory MEPs set up and were part of in Europe. And you've got them, you've got Vox, and you've got Law and Justice in Poland, all circling around this anti-immigration, anti-asylum seeking, and all this kind of thing that's going on. And that is their main strategy. And they bear a distinct resemblance to the UK Conservative Party. Other than, believe it or not, the Swedish Democrats don't want to scrap the Swedish welfare system, and the Italian Fratelli d'Italia, for their own reasons, they want increased child benefit, they want free childcare, they want to incentivise employers to employ new mums. They're not anti the welfare state either. So in that way, they're kind of more like traditional fascists in that this strong, stable state and supporting people for the various reasons through that. But what they do share with the UK Conservatives is their nativist and anti-immigrant stance. So before you actually complain about the Italian fascists and the Swedish fascists, let's have a look at what the UK Conservative Party actually stands for.
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy. Fair enough, actually.
So that was but Italy was lovely, and we had a fantastic time. And even though I've come back with a slight rattle in the chest from what seems to be a standard virus that's going around of some sort, which has affected the Scottish football squad for tonight's playoff game against Ukraine. And it may not be the most important event in world history, according to Sir Lindsay Hoyle, but I think hopefully you've enjoyed it. And we will see you next week, chums.